You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings. Welcome inside the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jason Smith and Doug Gottlieb in for Dan and the Danettes today. With a big day today, President's Day, coming off of Valentine's Day yesterday. Doug, how was your Valentine's Day?
It was great. Spent most of it in the gym with my son and a little bit at my mom's house.
How Valentine's Days are supposed to be, you and your son in the gym. That's right.
Yes.
You know, have you gotten to the point in your life where for Valentine's Day, basically any holiday, like the best thing I can do for my wife is say, you know what, I'm going to take Zoe someplace or we're going to go someplace and you can just do whatever. You know, you can just do whatever for a little while. And especially now with what's going on with COVID and being, you know, quarantined the way we are. I could just go somewhere and then leave you by yourself for like 2 hours. How does that sound? And that's like the greatest present ever.
Correct. Correct. As far away as possible is generally a good thing. A good thing for me. But, you know, what's fascinating about this weekend is it does, I don't know. I mean, you come off of a Super Bowl, and the Super Bowl was a dominating performance, as we discussed kind of last week. But you come off of a Super Bowl, and you need kind of that bridge into, okay, what's next? And I do think a three-day weekend, it gives everybody a chance to kind of regroup and get ready for what's next in the sports world. And, you know, will we get fans in the stands? Will we have, what will the NCAA tournament look like? What will the NBA playoffs look like? What will the Masters look like? What will baseball look like? All of these things, it is kind of like a recharge weekend, if you will.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun where it's, okay, you can have this one weekend. Yeah, there's no football. Oh, that's good, no football. Yeah, but next weekend, it's starting to get serious now for the NCAA tournament. We have to start watching more games here. You know, NBA, all these things. It's like, oh, so it's just one weekend. Yeah, it's just one weekend. You get one weekend off, and then we're back at it. That your break is over after that point.
Yeah, one weekend, and that's all you really need is one weekend, right?
And you're probably doing like 17 college basketball games this week.
It depends. Depends which ones are. I was supposed to do a game tonight that was postponed, and I had two games this weekend that were postponed. So, I mean, that's part of like, you know, there's no planning for what we have ahead, but which means the last couple of weeks, they're going to jam in as many games as possible. Like, you know, like I'm friends with the guys at Texas Tech and they had these TCU games and now they play them on, I think, back-to-back nights where they had missed both games previously or something like that. So yeah, it's going to get a little weird here the last couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah, well, I think at this point for you though, I'd be start asking different questions. Are they postponing these games because they don't like your analysis? I mean, really, it's starting to become a thing, man, you know?
that's altogether very possible. It's a good read by you.
Who's on the game? Well, it's Gottlieb. Cancel it. Just cancel it.
We have a COVID issue. COVID issues are great, you know. It's like you and I have discussed before. Anything you don't want to explain about baseball or whatever, anything that doesn't make any sense, you just say, that's baseball. You can use it for the rest of your life, you know?
Yeah, like, that's baseball.
Wait, why did you park facing the wrong direction? Hey, that's baseball. Like, that's what? That's best baseball. Right now you can just say COVID issues. COVID issues. Did somebody have COVID? I had COVID issues. That's all. I just trace contacting something along the lines of, you know, my brother's sister's mother's cousin, neighbor, their nephew had COVID, and I delivered them a pizza 2 weeks ago, just randomly, and that's why we're gonna shut down this game.
Mm. All right, let me write that down. Gottlieb analysis. Well, I got to write that down. I got to do some research on that. Well, speaking of issues, something cropped up big time last night with the Los Angeles Lakers, who are, you know, steamrolling through the Western Conference as they are. The defending champs are getting ready. You know, it's going to be a big just three-month tune-up from here on out for the playoffs. But potential big news as Anthony Davis aggravated tendinosis in his right Achilles. This is an injury that caused him to miss a couple of games earlier this week, was held out of the second half of their loss to Denver. And he's got an MRI coming today, and he's going to find out just what the diagnosis is. Right now he says, I think it's okay, but we got to have the MRI to make sure. Here was Davis after the game last night.
That last step kind of re-aggravated another injury I already had. You know, now it's like an Achilles sprain. You know, get an MRI tomorrow and try to figure out the next steps to get back on the floor. Now, I'm going to do the same thing, same steps to get it back right. Obviously, be a little bit more smarter with it, which I think I was smart the first time, but even more smarter, you know, up the treatment more instead of, you know, 3 times a day, maybe 5 times a day, just trying to get it back where it needs to be to go out there and help the team. But like I said, all that will dictate on the information I receive tomorrow from the MRI to be able to move forward to get back on the floor.
All right, Doug, he said that Sunday was the first day that his Achilles felt completely fine, didn't feel it in the morning, afternoon, pregame, which is why he felt so good to go. And now, look, he's dealing with this issue, and who knows what the outcome's going to be. These guys are playing a lot of minutes. I feel like the Lakers have the pedal to the floor here in the middle of February. Do you see that with this team, with what's going on with him?
Well, I mean, like, look, it's a really weird schedule. You know, you have some teams that hadn't played since February, and they were kind of jonesing to play, but because, you know, you had a shortened training camp or whatever, but you had, like, you know, you had that group of teams, I don't know, it was 8 that didn't play in the bubble, and they hadn't played since February, right? Then you have other teams that were out of the bubble pretty early. Then you had the Lakers, the finals were like 2 weeks, it felt like 2 weeks before they started the next season. They're a weird team to watch. Obviously, they're very good. They're probably more talented, especially offensively, than they were last year. And there are times in which when they play well and they play healthy, they feel like the best team in the league. But, you know, the tendinosis, I mean, I'm not a doctor. I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn Express. My basic understanding of it is it's like tendonitis of the knee, only in the Achilles tendon, and that's overuse. And we're like, you know, what are we doing here? But part of it is they do it to themselves. They get down. I don't know. Did you watch Friday night? They're playing Memphis. They were down like 20 like that. Mm-hmm. It was like down like 20. And I tweet out, like, did they even warm up? <You know? laughs> And they come back and then they take the lead in the third or fourth quarter. But because they're down so much, like, they got to play LeBron and Anthony Davis a bunch. And, you know, shock. What's amazing is LeBron James is in year 18 and there's no tendonitis or tendinosis to speak of. You know, Anthony Davis, though he's been in like 10th year in the league or whatever, but he's like half his age. Like, all of a sudden his body's like, man, what is LeBron doing that he's such an Iron Man? And this guy is, it's the one thing that you concern yourself with. Like, can you get to the finish line with everybody healthy? And, you know, when do you start to limit LeBron's minutes? They're not practicing, so that's good. So these are like their only workouts of the day. They are kind of managing themselves, but yeah, I mean, like, look, the fable of Achilles is like, that was his lone weakness, and that could be the weakness of this team.
You know, I see the Lakers playing, and I get that, hey, we want to be able, you think they want to be able to manage minutes. They talked all the preseason about LeBron's got to manage his minutes. That's the reason why they went out and they did what they did in free agency, bringing in a guy like Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder who can take up the scoring slack so LeBron can not have to play so many minutes. And especially in a year where you don't know what home court advantage is going to mean in the playoffs. I'd like to think that fans are going to be allowed back in across the board and you're going to see it, but maybe the best case scenario is you get, you know, it's one of those 22% capacity things, which is okay, it's great, but are you really going crazy for home court advantage for that? And especially, it's such a big unknown. And I see the Lakers, all right, we have Anthony Davis is going to keep playing. When injuries like this, I've seen doctors say this is where you got to sit for like a month. And then it's gone and you're back. The Lakers aren't in danger of missing the playoffs. They aren't in danger of doing anything. If they lose a couple of games in the standings, they do it. And AD is playing. And LeBron last week played 3 overtime games, played over 40 minutes in every game. And I thought, okay, well, there's no way he's going to play Friday. And then he played Friday. And he had a big comeback. He played a lot of minutes Friday. All right, well, he's not even going to travel on Sunday to Denver. They're not going to go to the Mile High Air and risk anything. He's just exhausted. Nope. LeBron played, and he played a bunch of minutes last night. And I don't understand why this push is, unless it's to, hey, we want to get such a good standing that when we get to the later part of the season, that's where we really want to taper off. And these guys are going to really have games off. And, you know, right now we're going to push it. And then once we get into the sweeter spot of April and when you see the schedule get to game 50 or so, in game 52, 55, that's when you're going to really start seeing them back off. Because I don't get why they're doing this so much right now.
Well, I hear you. I would say there's a bunch of different parts to it. If you watched last night against Denver, like, LeBron kind of shut it down in the second half. Like, he was playing, but he wasn't doing much, you know, and he wasn't exerting much energy. I personally, one of the things I agree with, it seems to be a LeBron philosophy, is like, he doesn't want to come out, go back in, come out, go back. Like that's when you actually feel like you get hurt. When you get, you know, when you get older, it's not necessarily how much you're playing. It's coming, you know, like it's really hard to sit there for a while, then come back in and get your motor running. That's when you feel like everything kind of locks up on you a little bit. And like I said, they're not practicing, and those minutes seem to be a ton of minutes. But when you consider, you know, the way in which they rest, I don't know. I do think that there's going to be some days off. I do think that, though, that part of it is he's chasing, you know, the all-time scoring mark, and he knows that he needs to play. The more minutes he plays, the more points he scores. I think the MVP is important to him as well. Like, I think LeBron's doing some legacy stuff here. You ever watch Hunt for Red October?
Be careful what you shoot at. These things don't take kindly to bullets.
That's your Sean Connery? It's not bad.
Yeah, well, I didn't know you were going to hit me with Hunt for Red October. I probably would have gotten my mouth more ready to do a Sean Connery.
That's okay. It's quite okay.
I should have done? I should have done, you idiot, you've killed us. Sorry, yes. Spoiler alert. That's there what I should have done. That's
well, I mean, unless you haven't watched TNT for the last 20 years, you have no idea what we're talking about. But do you remember the scene where he goes, the average Ruski doesn't take a dump without a plan, son, right? Uh-huh. Remember that? Okay. Yeah. That's LeBron. Like, LeBron is cunning. He is brilliant. And everything is based upon a plan. And he's even said, like, the MVP matters to him. He wants to win the MVP. He wants to be the all-time scoring leader. And... you know, and one of the reasons he plays a lot, and he's always done this, one reason he plays a lot of minutes is points per game. Like, if he's going to take a game off, he'll take a whole game off because it doesn't hurt your average. So, look, is that in any way deceptive? Like, no. I mean, he's earned a right to kind of do what he wants to do, but, like, let's be honest, what's kind of at stake there? The more he plays in a given game, the more stats that he accrues, and the better it looks for his chance to win MVP. And I believe that's kind of what's at play there. And then, you know, he shuts it down. They don't practice. He totally takes care of his body. Whereas Anthony Davis's Achilles, though it hurts them and how good they are, doesn't kill LeBron in terms of how much he scores, but it hurts him in terms of his assist to Anthony Davis. But, you know, look, I think it's fascinating to watch, you know, how that team, especially that had a lot of older pieces, not all of them are there from last year. Because what's lost in it, Kyle Kuzma play much better basketball. And what's lost in it is some of the other things is they're trying to figure out their bench and all that other stuff and who's going to be in the rotation come playoffs. But the if Anthony Davis isn't right, they ain't going anywhere once they get to when it really matters.
I got to think that after this, you're not going to see him for a while, regardless as to what, if they say, oh, it's fine, it's you know, with a few days rest, I would have a feeling that it would be at least a couple of weeks before we see him play again, maybe longer, because this is something that obviously is one of those, it's like any time I see an injury on an NFL team, like I see, oh, like this year for the Jets, right, I was excited about Denzel Mims, right, oh my God, he's going to be awesome, oh, they got him out of Baylor, he's great. And then anytime I see someone in camp with a hamstring injury or some kind of an Achilles injury or something like that, I go, oh, they're never going to be healthy this year. They're going to keep trying to come back to play because it's football, and it's going to be a lost season. So even though it's like a minor headline in training camp, oh, sitting out with a hamstring, okay, well, you know what, that's it. They're never going to be right because it's just going to be about rest, and either they're going to miss a bunch of time or they're just not going to be right, and they're going to be in and out of the lineup. And that's what I think hopefully the Lakers see is that, all right, you're risking him just being in and out of the lineup, and I know it's hard, but I think maybe at least a couple of weeks before we see him again, maybe even longer.
Yeah, I have no problem. I mean, you shut a dude down, right? Like, shut a dude down. You know, you get more minutes from Talen Horton-Tucker. Everybody loves. You know, you see what else you got. You're still going to make the playoffs, and you're going to be kind of in prime position. You know, I think it's a very real discussion to have. And then there's just the question of who is the most likely challenger to them. Like, quietly, the Clippers are pretty confident in how they're playing. Quietly, the Utah Jazz feel like they're a really, really good team. I know they're a tough matchup for the Bucks. And the Denver Nuggets are a team that exudes confidence and wants another shot at the Lakers, whether or not they're that good or not, like, kind of, we'll see here. So, there's a bunch at play in the West where the Lakers, when healthy, are clearly the best. The question is, can they get to the postseason healthy?
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
I know we're going to get into Carson Wentz in a couple minutes because there's big drama surrounding him. But, you know, it just struck me, Doug, a few minutes ago. You know, you and I were talking before the show about what our weekends were like, and you know, you spent a lot of it with youth baseball. What, 45 games in the last
basketball.
Couple of days?
Basketball.
Youth basketball. Basketball. What do you have? You had a bunch of games the last couple of days.
We had 13 games, and I coached 10 of them. It's four, that's 12 and four, 16 games. So I coached in 14 of them, I think. Yeah, 14 of them. Yeah, that was a lot.
Oh, man.
That was a lot
of
ball.
But I've got you just saying the same things over and over at the end. Box out. Coach is tired. Okay.
Pass the ball. Pass. What are you doing? What are you doing? I have one kid who, you get these kids that are like pleasers, right? And they're great kids. And they, anything they do, they come look at the bench. So I told the kid, I was like, listen, if you look at me or you look at your dad, then I'm going to take you out. And then so like all of a sudden he he's doing great for a couple minutes and then he misses a shot. And he looks over at me and I take him out. I go, why are you taking him out? Why are you taking him out? He's like, I don't know. I was like, did you look at me? He's like, oh yeah. It's like, stop looking at me.
You know, I was thinking back because, you know, here having this conversation, I spent all weekend trying to get my daughter's softball season, you know, off the ground and stuff. And there's a lot of, you know, moving parts and everything. But I was thinking back to the first time you and I filled it, because you and I fill in on Dan, you know, we've been doing it for a while now, continue. We filled in, I remember, right after Memorial Day weekend last year. And I remember we had a conversation on the show about how it feels like things might be turning with COVID. Like this was a big weekend where people got out and did things and it felt kind of normal. And he said, okay, maybe things are turning. It turned out, you know, it was the worst weekend because that's what, you know, started the whole big push. And we never really got past COVID in the summer. We needed some time. And still when holidays came, it was a lot of people not doing things safe enough. And you had super spreader events and all these things. But I'll tell you, coming off this weekend and seeing where we are right now, you know, on February 22nd, I really do feel like now we're going to start seeing really bright days ahead fast. I was more hopeful of it last year, I think, when we talked about it. I feel better about that, more informed, that I think we are really starting to hit a good spot right now in the calendar.
I do too, but, you know, it's like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Let's hope it's not another train.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really where those are my feelings on it. We are also a weird time economically, Jason, right? Like here we are and we had these record unemployment numbers because for so often things were shut down. But interest rates are at a crazy like all-time low, which of course has helped stimulate the real estate market. And I don't know, you know, where you are in LA, where I am in Orange County, like it's crazy, like just exploded crazy. But this is not just, you and I used to live in Connecticut, and Connecticut, which has long been kind of a very stale real estate market, has spiked up. I mean, my last house I sold in Connecticut, I just saw was back on the market like for a crazy number. And when I talked to text my realtor, like, yeah, that's what's happening everywhere. And I was thinking about Carson Wentz. And you had this story, right, where Carson Wentz, the Eagles, what was it? They haven't even gotten offered a first-round pick for Carson Wentz?
Yeah, and now they could put Zach Ertz in a trade if you try to push things along here. You know, Zach Ertz is 30, and he's coming off a career low season. But still, Zach Ertz is a really good tight end. And they're at the point now where they're not getting the offers that they want for Wentz. They're only getting a second round or a couple of second rounders, which I think is what they got from the Colts. So now, hey, we could sweeten the pot here and put Zach Ertz in here so we can get more draft picks.
Yeah, the thing I'm thinking, and throwing in Zach Ertz into the sweeten the pot deal, this reminds me of, if you follow real estate, the idea of chasing the market, right? The market is hot. Like, oh, look, they just moved Matt Stafford. Look what they got in return. Like, that's like your neighbor sells his house. and you thought your house was worth, you know, $400,000, and all of a sudden the neighbor sells his house for $550,000, and you're like, wait, my house is just as nice as that. You know, it's a little bit newer. And yeah, you know, there's a couple things that we need to do to it, but man, honey, let's put this thing on the market. And she starts thinking like, okay, well, if that's, that's $550,000, and that was sold a couple months ago, like, huh, we could sell ours for $575,000. You know, it's got a little bit more square footage. Like, yeah, but it hasn't been redone. It's not really, that's okay. Like, you know, well, so you decide to list your house. Meanwhile, you know, the wife goes and finds the next house, right? Which is $650,000, right? Because you're going to make profit on your house, and let's go get under contract on this house. And now she's like all emotionally all in on it, right? She's basically already moved. She's like, and you're contingent on the sale of your house.
Right. Once you get the fever, there's no turning back. You get that real estate fever. It's like, there's no dialing it back or stopping. It's just going to go till the end.
Correct. So there's now all of a sudden you put it on the market and the feedback is like, yeah, you're listing this thing too high. And you're sitting there going like, wait a second. I know my lot. It's a really good lot. I know this house and this house where they sold. Square footage wise, you know, what comps were right there. So, but you listed for a little too high and the market, you know, kind of tightens a little bit on you. And there's just not that many buyers out there. And they're starting to look at your house. Now that it sits on the market, the longer it sits on the market, the more, even if it's listed correctly, people start, well, why has it been listed for this long? And you're sitting there going like, wait, I should get top dollar for it. And what ends up happening? So your first reaction is, well, either change realtors or tell your realtor, like, you need to put it on Trulia, you need to put it on realtor.com, you need to put it on Zillow, you need to put it in the paper, you need to really advertise for it. Like, everybody knows your house is on the market. Like, it's not any secret. There's just not that many buyers for it at this point in time, especially in the middle of a school year. So you end up chasing the market and giving it away because you're already contingent on the sale of another house and your wife has already kind of moved on. I think that's what's happening with the Eagles. They were so convinced that who they have, and they've paid a chunk of the salary already to Carson Wentz, and they're willing to take on, you know, the tax bill, the dead cap money for getting rid of them. They're going to end up chasing the market because they overlisted their property. That's classic of what's happening right here.
Yeah, and eventually they're going to have to realize that Carson Wentz is a distressed property. I'm sorry. Was that I should have not done the whole realtor thing. I should not.
No, it works. I don't think it's a distressed property. I just think they assumed it was worth more than it's worth, and now they're chasing the market. It's not necessarily distressed. And yeah, I mean, it's distressed from only standpoint is now once you put a guy on the market, on the trade market, now it's over. Right. It's like once you call the divorce attorney, like, it's over. It doesn't, there's no taking that one back.
Yeah. They need to see reality that a player is only worth what someone's going to pay for him. Right. It's like they say that about memorabilia. Right. Well, how much is this card worth? You know, the Honus Wagner card. How much is this bit of memorabilia worth? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's worth about $500,000. But then a winning bid in an auction is $175,000. Well, guess what? It's worth $175,000. I mean, that's kind of what it is. Or, hey, this is probably worth about $1 million. But you know what? Todd McFarlane decides I'm going to spend $6 million on this baseball. So then it's worth $6 million. That's kind of where it's at with the Eagles. They have to realize that his worth is not what Matthew Stafford's was. You know, Matthew Stafford getting traded and a couple of first-round picks and a third-round pick going the other way, mainly it's because they had to take on Jared Goff's contract. But you see that and think, well, Carson Wentz is as good as Matthew Stafford. Well, okay. No. I mean, certain guys are seeing their prices go up. Deshaun Watson certainly saw his price go up. The great quarterbacks, they're seeing their price go up. But this is what the reality is for the Eagles. And at some point, they have to kind of deal with it as a I'll go another one. They have to deal with it as a sunk cost, right? All right, we drafted Carson Wentz. It didn't work out. We just have to move him for what we can. We got to get out from under this, and we have to move on because we've said publicly we're going to trade him. And when you say publicly you're going to trade somebody and you're not sure about what the outcome's going to be, you can take a risk and get burned because that's what the Eagles did. If the Eagles didn't say, hey, we're trading Carson Wentz, everything would be fine. But they misjudged his value. And so when you say we're trading somebody and, you know, look, his house, he's still sitting out on the market. Of course, it's going to be worth less and less. The Eagles have to do something soon because they're not going to get the values aren't going to go up for him. They have to suck it up and bite the bullet and say, you know what? It didn't work. We didn't get the first round pick we wanted. We can get a couple of seconds. We can get out from under him. It's not a big deal. We're not paying Jalen Hurts any money for the next 4 years. He's on a great contract because we got him in the second round, and they just have to move on. And the sooner they come to that realization, the easier it's going to be and the better it is for them to move on, get whatever draft haul they want to get, and figure out what they want to do with the team.
I don't know if there's as big a rush as you think there is. Obviously, you'd like to get it done before the draft. I think it's my problem with, like, what is their plan? I guess their plan is to draft a quarterback, because Jalen Hurts is, by my estimation, not the answer long term. I mean, that got badly exposed. They beat the Saints when the Saints didn't have a book on him. Then he looked good against the Cardinals, didn't have very good defense. And then once people got a book on him, his limitations got exposed. I think he's fine, but he just limited as a pocket passer. And there's a reason that people thought of him as a third or fourth round pick. And, you know, now Howie Roseman drafted him. So maybe Howie Roseman has a greater belief in him. And I know there's a locker room belief in him. I know guys generally like him. But there's just what we've seen, there seems to be a limit to a lower ceiling than Carson Wentz. The problem is that Carson Wentz is experiencing a lower floor than you have with Jalen Hurts in terms of how he's playing right now. I don't know what they're doing. You know, I know that the hiring process was a poop show, and, you know, you had to have somebody who was willing to take orders from up top. But why would you hire a head coach, you know, who worked with Frank Reich, unless you thought you were going to hold on to Carson Wentz and now you want to get rid of Carson Wentz? That part doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's like they decided that everybody is on a different page. You know, like Jeffrey Lurie clearly is in for the rebuild, right? Okay, I'm good with the rebuild. Like, they got rid of Doug Peterson. We're going to trade Carson Wentz. I get that. But I don't get that the rest of the team isn't on the rebuild. that's not what we have going on here. I mean, that's why the quicker they trade Carson Wentz, they can find their direction, right? What's our identity going to be? We're going to try to go forward with Jalen Hurts. I like him a little bit more than you do. I think mainly because, all right, the guy went through a season where there was no preseason reps. There was no anything. He didn't get any of the first team reps. And then suddenly he's kind of thrown out there, and he showed glimpses of being a pretty good quarterback. He had some 300-yard games. He had one game where he threw three touchdowns against Arizona. You mentioned that game. So I'm okay with, hey, all right, let's give Jalen Hurts a shot here as we go through the offseason with as close to a normal offseason we're going to have. He's going to take all the reps. He's going to get games before he goes in. And he showed glimpses. And I'm a big fan of, if you show glimpses, I'll give you a chance. But yeah, should they get a quarterback? Yeah, but they need to find out who they are. Like, all teams need to find out who they are. What's their identity? What's the Jets' identity going to be? Are they staying with Sam Darnold? Are they not? It's like everybody's in this big holding pattern while things get figured out with the quarterbacks. And it's Carson Wentz. And then when he gets traded, then it'll be, okay, what are the Jets going to do with Sam Darnold? Is he going to get traded? Then is someone really going to call with an offer for Derek Carr? The Raiders are kind of in a situation right now where they don't know how they're going forward. It's like the whole league is being held hostage by, well, we got all these quarterbacks, and until we know where their destinations are going to be, they're all just kind of in this limbo that can go on for months. And we can even go into the draft or into free agency and potentially out of free agency with some of these things still not being answered.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like, the Wentz thing is fascinating. I don't think Jalen Hurts is a starting quarterback long-term in the NFL. I'll put that one on record. I do think there's a little bit of anybody but Carson Wentz to it. And I know you need mobile quarterbacks. I think what's fascinating is, you know, everybody points out, well, you know, he, look at the numbers he put up at Oklahoma. Midway through the season, they stopped with a lot of the stuff they did for Baker, a lot of the stuff they did with Kyler Murray, because he's not that type of thrower. And so they just had him run it more. And then running numbers were in the 20 per game sort of variety. I think they were a little disappointed with his pocket presence. And you look at Alabama, and clearly he was good there, but they were light years better once they went to Tua Tagovailoa. And, you know, even what they did with Mac earlier this year in terms of throwing and progressions and accuracy and those other things. I think he's a tremendous competitor, and I think he's a tremendous dude, but I don't think he's a tremendous quarterback. He has a lot of the intangibles. It's just the tangibles, just aren't there, and it's not like we haven't seen him play football. He's played more football than just about anybody before he got to the NFL. So that being said, you're right. That's really the story of this offseason, which last year we had a glimpse into this. You know, you had from Mariota going from starter to backup. You had Jameis going from starter to backup. You had two Hall of Famers, one in Phillip Rivers going from the Chargers to the Colts, and, of course, Brady going from the Patriots to the Buccaneers. You know, you had Nick Foles, you know, two stops. He went to Jacksonville, then midseason he goes to the Bears. So we've had a bizarre amount of quarterback movement, but I think, like, let's just be honest, Aaron Rodgers ain't going anywhere. You know, the big question is Wentz. I think Garoppolo and maybe Deshaun Watson, although I don't think they're going to trade him, nor necessarily should they trade him. The Wentz thing feels like an overvaluation. The rest of the league knows that you screwed yourself, right? You screwed yourself by how you handled this entire thing. And I think a distressed property actually is a good one. It's not that they're going through bankruptcy, but you got to move it. And when you got to move it because of a divorce, you know, the sharks start circling and they know they can get something at a relative discount rate.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Fox Sports Radio, the Dan Patrick Show. Jason Smith, Doug Gottlieb in for Dan and the Danettes today. Phone number is 877-99 on Fox. You know, we got Albert Breer scheduled to come up. Hopefully we can catch up with him in a couple of minutes. But, we got him right now? Very good. Oh, well, joining us now on the hotline. Very busy morning for Albert Breer. Got a bunch of big stuff on Monday morning quarterback, including what the Eagles need to do with Carson Wentz. Albert, what's happening, man?
Hey, guys. Sorry about the delay there.
Oh, it's all good. So what story are you breaking? What the Jets have traded Sam Darnold and are getting Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson?
Oh, yeah. No, I've been working through a few things this morning, but nothing breaking as of now.
All right. So you had a bit this morning on Carson Wentz and the Eagles situation. Doug and I talked about this earlier this hour. They're not getting the offers they expected. What's got to happen right now?
Well, I think right now the two teams that we know that have been involved at least at some level are the Colts and the Bears. And those teams know the good of Carson Wentz. They also know the bad of Carson Wentz. And both teams have guys in their buildings who clash with Carson Wentz at times over the last few years. John DeFilippo with the Bears. Mike Groh, who's sort of been ignored, but, you know, really clashed with Carson with the Eagles. He's with the Colts now. So both those teams have all the background, good and bad, on Carson Wentz, and I think the way both those teams look at it is we're willing to invest, we're willing to take a flyer on him, but do we really want to invest in him? And you know, the contract you're going to be taking on, that's an investment, and so do you want to sink like high-end draft capital plus like 2 years of guaranteed money into a player who looked completely broken last year? And that's even with the acknowledgement there could be a high-end payoff if you can find a way to fix him and get him back to where he was 3 or 4 years ago. So I think that's sort of where it's at, where, you know, the Eagles are looking at it and saying, well, you know, we want to get something good in return for Carson Wentz. We want, you know, to walk away from this with a first-round pick. And these two teams and presumably others that have since dropped out, we're looking at it and saying, well, you're already asking us to take on this contract, which, you know, basically locks us in for 2 years, and you want us to give up high-end draft capital on top of that? That's a lot to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like I use the real estate analogy, right? Feels like they thought the market was Matt Stafford, and they're like, yeah, that's not a comp for where you guys are.
Right.
And yeah, they're like, you know, I can't believe we're not getting that. Like, you're not getting the offers because you're overlisting your property. And now they kind of screw them. Like, you can't have Carson Wentz back in the building after, you know, it's calling the divorce attorney and go, no, really, honey, I want to work it out. I know we called the divorce attorney. That was just, you know, just in case, right? It's hard to put that genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, and I think it's, and that's, and the thing is, when they did initially ask for the Stafford return, I mean, it was that was considered so outrageous that some teams were, you know, basically like I don't even like how do we even counter that? You know what I mean? Like we're just out. Like we're not going anywhere close to there. And if you can get close to there, then God bless you. But we're not going to be a part of it. So I think that you know there's probably a little bit of overshooting the market here without question. I will say like the Eagles GM Howie Roseman is one of the best as far as doing deals and finding a way to creatively get a return for assets. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if somehow they find a way to get a decent return for Carson Wentz, but they're going to have to be creative. And there are a couple ways they could do it. They could take a bad contract back. Maybe that would help them get, you know, something in the draft pick return. They could actually wait to execute the trade. Carson Wentz is due a $10 million roster bonus, I believe, on March 18th, so they could wait until after March 18th to actually execute the trade and pay the roster bonus for his new team. There are a number of things that they could do, you know, but I do think that this is sort of a window into how the rest of the league views Carson Wentz right now. And it's sort of interesting, too, guys, because we've seen this happen with quarterbacks where, you know, teams will game it up for him early in their careers. And they'll look really good coming out of the gate. And then the league will sort of catch up to the player. And the player will struggle to counterpunch. And I really feel like that's sort of the book on Carson Wentz now. Is, like, can you fix him? Is there a way to get him past that first phase of his career? Because we've seen guys, I think Robert Griffin's probably the best example, that were spectacular, you know, coming out of the box. Because their teams were able to do some things to make it easy for them earlier in their careers. And then when they had to sort of evolve and grow, they couldn't take that next step. And so the question becomes whether or not Carson Wentz is going to be able to take that next step, because a lot of the physical ability is still there.
Monday Morning Quarterbacks, Albert Breer with us here on the Dan Patrick Show. Jason Smith, Doug Gottlieb. All right, when it comes to Trevor Lawrence, he had a great pro day. And then over the weekend, yep. We find that he's going to have the shoulder surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. This is going to put him out for as much as 6 months. I mean, obviously it's not going to change the Jaguars' thinking. They're going to draft him number one. But how much concern is there right now for what his rookie year is going to be? It could wind up being a lost year for him.
Well, that's presuming that you have a normal offseason, which I don't think anybody's presuming right now. You know, and I think that's probably part of the equation for him in deciding to have the surgery now, is that, like, you know, normally a quarterback would come out of the draft at the end of April, go into a rookie mini camp, hit the ground running, go to OTAs. He would have all the passing school stuff. Then he would go into the full squad mini camp. And by the time he got to the summer break, he'd have 5 or 6 weeks of field work under his belt with his new team. Because of COVID, I don't think that's going to be the case this year. In fact, I'd be surprised if there's much of an off-season program at all for most of these teams, based on the way that the union's sort of handling it right now, and that I don't think that they're going to feel comfortable until the players are vaccinated, putting them back in those buildings until it's absolutely necessary. And I think we saw this year it's not absolutely necessary until you get to training camp. So, you know, the good news for Trevor Lawrence is he can still do all the board work he needs to do. He can be part of all the Zoom meetings. If the off season is the way that it was last year, like, he won't really miss much. And remember, this is how Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa, that's how their indoctrination to the league happened last year. So is it like a little bit of a bump in the road that he's going to go through and rehab this injury, you know, as he's making the transition to the NFL? Sure. But I don't think it's the same sort of bump that it might have been 2 or 3 years ago when he would be missing a lot of time on the field.
Who's the quarterback with the Carolina Panthers next year?
I think it's a rookie. That'd be my guess. And I actually think the Panthers are probably the floor for the 4 quarterbacks right now. Now, this could change with time, and don't hold me to this, because I might have a different opinion 2 months from now. But right now, if you ask me to guess, I would say the top 4 quarterbacks go inside the top 8 picks. So that's, you know, Lawrence, obviously, and then in some order, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance. And so I think that the Panthers will probably wind up with one of those guys on their roster. They may even trade up to get him. So I think it's either going to be Lance. I think in all likelihood it will probably be Fields or Lance, because I think Wilson's going to probably be the second overall pick. You know, and that, of course, is presuming that the Texans don't wind up moving Deshaun Watson, which, as of right now, they're not of a mind to do that.
You can follow him on Twitter at Albert Breer. That is at Albert Breer, a senior NFL reporter, lead content strategist for the Monday Morning Quarterback. Albert, as always, appreciate your time, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. Have a good one, guys.
All right, so there it goes. You know, you're right, Doug. They're, of all the teams, the Panthers are like the team that says, we are replacing our guy, right? Even though they signed Teddy Bridgewater last, like, we have to get a new guy right now. We got this, and we have another big story out of the NBA. Big injury news coming up next, Fox.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com. Or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
This weekend, look, the Lakers had a rough weekend. Anthony Davis, we're waiting for the results of his MRI today as he aggravated his Achilles issue in last night's loss to Denver. But the other bit of drama this weekend came from Giannis, who, after the Bucks lost to the Jazz, said, yeah, you know what? That's the best team in the Western Conference. Take a listen.
So today we played the game, I guess, the best team in the West. They've been playing amazing. They won with this game 17 out of their last 18. You know, they're playing good. They're moving the ball. They're making threes. They're finding the rollers. They're keeping it simple. They're going to the front line. They're pretty much doing everything. They're having fun. So there's a lesson to learn. We've got to move on. We have another one in 2 days.
I like how much he knows about the Jazz. It's like watching a LeBron post game when, you know, LeBron likes to tell you how much he knows about the other team and he gets into their defensive rotations and what's going on outside. It's kind of like a LeBron statement there. Look, they won 17 out of 18. They've done this. They've done this. I kind of like that at least he's, hey, I'm gonna give you some stuff you need to know about the Jazz following the game.
Well, I mean, he paid attention, right? Like he paid attention. I mean, and plus they just played him, right? They just played him and they smacked the Bucks 129-115, and it is interesting that how, and I think they match up really well because they can put Rudy Gobert on Giannis, and that's a hard matchup for Giannis. Remember, they have Jordan Clarkson has started to really become Jamal Crawford of the league right now. And Clarkson always kind of had it in him, but Clarkson's reputation was he was a hangout guy. You know, he liked, you know, dating models and hanging out and just happened to be good at basketball, but wasn't all in. And I think maybe being in Utah, where there's not the capabilities of hanging out nearly as much, has really helped him. And, you know, they don't start him. They play him 26 minutes a game and he scores 17 and a half off it. He just comes in, not a point guard, doesn't have to be a point guard, right? And, you know, they just have – it's a very well-constructed team, and I think it's a very well-coached team. I think Quinn Snyder does an excellent, excellent job. And then, you know, Donovan Mitchell, obviously there was the strangeness with the Shaq interview where I don't think you're that level, right?
Yeah.
And he's just you don't think so? And I don't know if he's that level, but – all I can tell you is they keep winning games. They keep being impressive. And what's going to be interesting to me is what Mike Conley looks like at the end of the season. Does he wear down? Because at his position, it's hard to be long in the tooth. But you could say the same thing about Chris Paul. And then, you know, what they're able to get out of Joe Ingles and Bogdanovich and Clarkson is really fascinating considering what else they have thrown around them.
See, I said last year, we're getting close to the era of the Jazz and Nuggets being powers in the West. You know, both these teams are, you know, they have their young stars, they've given them money, and they, you know, they're building the right way. And the Jazz era might be here. Look, I love Donovan Mitchell. He's the closest thing the NBA has to Kobe Bryant. And I love the interview with Shaq. I love how he kind of just, you could just see him fuming on set, but I'm keeping my cool and I'm just going to say that's all right. So the era of the Jazz might already be here. But I don't know that I'm buying they're the best yet. I mean, clearly it's not like the Lakers are floundering and they're sitting at 500. You know, it's not like all the Clippers are really terrible. Yeah, they're on a good run right now, and they're on the way, and clearly finishing first in the Western Conference would be a feather in their cap because it's an achievement for them. You know, teams on the way up like to have these benchmarks. Well, hey, we were Western Conference champions here, and now we're moving up, and we're getting validation. But I'm not buying they're the best yet because you got to get to the playoffs. You got to win when it really counts. So I think it's a little early to say, well, here, the Jazz are the best team in the West. And it's really odd for Giannis to say that, too. I mean, considering you're looking at a team in the Lakers that just won the championship, and you're going, really? They're still not the best? It's just kind of a weird time for him to say that.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I think he's saying they're the best basketball team right now, and it's a way of giving kind of respect to it. I don't look anything. Do I think that there's a little something there where he knows the Lakers don't respect him? Yeah, I think so. There's probably a little bit there. But I also think he's speaking of, like, just in a representative of the league, like, hey, man, I think this team is really good. They just kicked our ass. Like, I don't know how many of you guys are paying. You guys are paying attention to stuff that doesn't matter. LaMelo Ball highlights in games that don't matter. Like, you guys are paying attention to LeBron and whether or not he traveled. I'm just telling you, in real ball, this team is hooping.
Don't forget the flopping, too. You know, LeBron flopping is a very, very big deal the last few days.
Correct.
Don't forget. So who are you buying right now in the Western Conference? We talked about our Eastern Conference teams a few minutes ago. I told you, look, I love what the Sixers are doing. You know, you threw out your issues with the Nets. Who are you buying right now in the West?
Well, look, I like the Jazz. I mean, the Lakers are the best team if they're healthy and they're rested and they're ready. And, you know, until further. But I like the Jazz. I think the Clippers are still the most likely competitors in the NBA playoffs. I don't think they're a perfect team. But I think they've improved their roster and they've improved their style of play. So I think the Clippers are the 1B. And then I think there's the Jazz more so than the Nuggets. The Nuggets, they have so many defensive weaknesses. Look, and Jamal Murray played otherworldly in the bubble. But I think the Lakers are not a good matchup for them at all. So I don't love the Nuggets as much as some people do, even though I think Michael Porter Jr. is going to be a problem for a long time because he can really score, but he can't guard a soul. But he can really, really score. And then, you know, you kind of got everybody else. I think in the East and the West, there's four legit teams. I think the West, there's four or five. And then, you know, then there's the Portlands of the world and the Golden States of the world, which are more of a nuisance than a real threat.
Yeah, I would like to think at this point that everybody wouldn't be 15-13, but yet that's where we are in the NBA. You know, and if somebody said, you know, hey, I haven't watched the NBA all season, right? I've been busy with the NFL. I've been busy with other things. What have I missed in the NBA season? I would say, hey, you haven't really missed much. I mean, you know,
it's
certainly
it's been weird. Like
you haven't missed much.
Even talking about it, like. There's not a lot going on. It's kind of just basketball in perpetuity. It makes it a lot less interesting. And for anybody, like, look, they're like Steph Curry's amazing to watch. Kevin Durant's amazing to watch. Luka is amazing to watch. These guys are incredibly talented. Trae Young, incredibly talented. It's just I don't know what happened when they went to the bubble, and maybe it's the proximity of this season to last season, but it just hasn't really resonated, and I think that hurts college basketball. I think college basketball lacking the star power hurts the NBA. I don't know, the whole thing, it's like, yeah, kind of, I need to get some fans back in there. I need to get some sort of feelings back in there, and we're just missing something.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, it's and hopefully you see it sort of suss itself out as the season goes, but watching it, it's like, okay, well, all right, well, the Sixers are good, okay, and the Jazz are good, and everything else is kind of as expected. The Knicks don't suck as much as you thought they were going to. Phoenix is a lot better than people thought. That's really the NBA in 5 seconds, you know, of what we've seen so far this year. And you know, that's why I think, like, a story like, is Steph Curry the MVP, something would cut through the clutter. You know, because that's what the NBA needs is, you know, hey, we have all these different stories and here's this team and here's this team. They need something to hook onto for the season. And that's why that Steph Curry story will gain a lot. You talked about the Warriors of being a team that's just, you know, they're more of a nuisance than anything. But if this is a case where, you know, he plays in the late game all the time and any night he can go for 45 or 50 and, hey, I got to see how Steph is doing, and that'll be a big conversation. You know, the NBA needs something like that to be able to say, okay, what's a big through line for us? Because we got a long way to go until the playoffs. You know, it's not a regular year where, okay, we're at the All-Star break now. Normally we'd be at the All-Star break and we're here. No, everything is much longer. We got a long way to go to get to the playoffs.
We do have a long way to go to get to the playoffs. That is true. It's weird and it feels arduous. I don't understand the All-Star game thing either. Like, what is the, I'm with LeBron and all these guys. Like, what are we doing? Obviously it's to fulfill some sort of TV thing, but man, like, we all need a little bit of a 20-second timeout here.
Weirder season for you, college basketball or the NBA? Because you've had like 11 games postponed in the last week of college basketball games you're covering.
I think weirder season, definitely college basketball. College basketball is so much about fans and home courts and unique arenas, right? Whereas the NBA, you know, what is it, 2 weeks becomes a habit? Like, this has kind of become a habit, and it's much more of a TV event. So I would say weirder is college basketball.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.